Hang in there.
Dude,
it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. It is midweek now. Moving away from the holiday, moving back into real life, gearing up for the third major of the year, the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And this week we have, today we have a really interesting conversation that you have with Brad Faxon, Smiley. So we're excited to get to that. Although first, I have to tie up some loose ends from my vacation weekend. The second Eagle Point voyage, lot better than the first one. Made about 40 feet of putts on 16 and 17 to go birdie there. So that was a nice kind of 17.
Which holes you said?
16, 17. Yeah.
All right. So help me out here. 16, is that the one with like a little water left, kind of dogleg left?
That is 17, my favorite hole in the course. The one that kind of goes slightly uphill with the meandering creek or along the left-hand side.
Is 16 like the par three?
No, 16 is sort of like a downhill par four.
Like very, very narrow.
Trees. Like yes.
In a very narrow green.
Yes. Yes.
Like, but a big narrow green.
Exactly. Like kind of like left shaped, kind of left to right.
Yeah.
Like diagonally with some fairway. Yeah. Bunkers.
That was,
that.
It was an easy hole if you hit the fairway.
Yes.
But if you didn't, that's when it got difficult.
The driver is driving right now. We were in a good spot. So smash that one down there and hit
good
a little.
Good for you. I'm so happy for anybody that's driving the golf ball good. So happy for you.
I sense a little bit of, there's a little bit of extra in that statement there. There's something buried underneath that.
Suck. I told Fran last night, it's like, Fran, I stink right now. I cannot hit the golf ball straight.
Well, I'd say stay tuned, right? Because we could see a Cleveland high bore or a Cleveland Classic back in the bag soon.
I tell you what, I might just start playing with a hockey stick at this point.
You know, whatever gets you off the tee. It's nice. But I'll tell you what, Smiley, the shanks are back. The shanks are back on the menu. I shanked a bump and run. I don't know how I did it. I actually just had to laugh out loud. So it's one of those things that's it's very cyclical in golf. It's like
I've never done that.
It was actually I think actually what happened was I think I kind of stubbed it and it pulled the toe open, and what happened is I kind of like bladed it off the edge of the toe. Like it was not a hosel shot, but it went, you know, 45 degrees to the right. I just started laughing. I was just like, I don't good thing I'm driving it good. I have something to take away that's good there. But got it around pretty good there. Just love that piece of property. We have some fans out there, some people who are watching and listening to the show. So we thank the whole crew out there at Eagle Point for supporting the Smiley Show.
Wait, what? Say
yeah.
What do you mean?
We had multiple caddies in our group. Guys, shout out to John and EC out at Eagle Point who saw the head cover that I had. I had my little Smiley Show head cover on, and they said we went back and watched the episode, your last episode. Everyone in the caddy room or whoever was, they're all watching it and listening to what we were saying about the course. They loved it. So big fans of the show there. And then I had a group playing behind me.
Are they also still looking for our plaque, for my plaque?
Well, you know, let's just say I've started to inquire there. I'm saying there's not a plaque in there yet. What can we do to get a plaque made for you? I think the goal is to get you back to Eagle Point, present you with a plaque, and then if you can
plant a tree, you know?
Yeah.
The top five guys on the leaderboard get a tree at Eagle Point.
Just pick the
listen,
most...
I didn't have any top five, so I'm milking this.
I love it.
To the end.
I love it. And they all loved it out there, too. I think we find the most difficult driving hole out there. And we plant a tree like 40 yards right of the fairway and then just put the leaderboard from that Wells Fargo championship right at the base of the tree with your name highlighted.
Oh, God. I drove it like a madman that week. It was so pure. God, was I hitting it good.
I'm stunned. I mean, I'm not stunned. You're phenomenal at the game of golf. But, like, that is one of the harder golf courses I play. So, like, you must have been lighting it up that week. It's fantastic. Just driving it good. And
this may surprise you, but... I wish you could have played with me when I was like really good. You would have been like, oh, okay. there's signs of it every now and then, but man, just keep dreaming, right?
Well, I think we get you back there. I think it's like one
of
those things.
Thank you. I need that.
I think we get you back there. I think we conjure the memories, the good feelings at Eagle Point. Sure, but sure. I'm just glad people are fans of the show out there. So yeah,
thank
good
you.
Good times out there. Appreciate all y'all for watching and listening. And we are excited that you're here today to hear this conversation that Smiley had with Brad Faxon, because it is a very good one. And to do that, we are going to get some help from our friends at Ahead. We're talking, it is a trust-based relationship, of course, between Smiley Kaufman and Brad Faxon. These two guys are on the broadcast together at NBC, Golf Channel, bringing all sorts of insight. Brad, of course, one of the greatest putters in the history of the game. So Ahead builds and manages digital platforms that power the most successful organizations in the world. Their consultative approach, unmatched engineering, and innovative solutions combine to accelerate the impact of technology in every client they serve. Ahead's long-standing relationships are built on outcomes and experience with both their clients and technology partners. You can learn more at ahead.com. And Smiley, I think the relationship, the trust-based relationship, to use Ahead's phrasing, that I'm most interested in you unpacking today with Brad is his with Rory McIlroy, especially now that Rory's completed the career Grand Slam. Any sort of tee-up you want to provide there for people to listen to what you're going to talk about with Brad?
I think it's pretty obvious that with Brad's, just the way he coaches, I think it's done very from a player's standpoint. And I really love how he approaches the game, whether when he was playing or coaching. I think he does it in a way that I really appreciate. You know, so many coaches just try to be right about everything and just want to be the smartest guy in the room. I think Brad's a coach that wants to know what the player, you know, likes and what they don't like and what how they like to be coached. And I think Brad does that to an elite level, and he's helped many players, and Rory being one of them. He's also been very fun to work with. He's somebody I've gotten to know over the last couple of years, who I luckily was invited to play in his CVS Charity Classic up in Rhode Island, him and Billy Andre's event. They've raised close to like $15 million for charity, and Brad and I were paired together. 1 year it was me, him, and I think it was Brittany Winsicum. I think us three were player together. That was the first year they went PGA Tour player, LPGA Tour player, and then a Champions Tour player. And boy, oh boy, did we get last, but we had a great time.
Some lasts are better than others. I can only imagine.
Yeah, I felt bad. You know, we were coming off of a PGA Tour event. I show up, I'm just wore out. I have not seen the golf course, and I played. Not great. I was still playing pretty decent at the time, but I didn't play very well that day. I was coming off a wedding in Augusta, and my car got totaled leaving Augusta. There was just a lot going on.
yeah, that's not conducive to good golf. But it sounds like good fun though. I mean,
it was a really cool event. Brad was just it reminded me of what Arnold Palmer probably did out on the golf course, which was conversing more with the fans than actually like caring about the golf that day. And so it was a lot of fun.
Hello to Anna Carter. Sounds like she's up there.
It's a rainy day here, so we're making it.
We got two of those going. In fact, there was a nice backstory behind the Brad Faxon interview. I was super dadding here while my wife was out pursuing educational progress in the nursing department. So, listen, it's time. Anna Carter's ready. Walker and Kadick are ready. Let's get to the Brad Faxon interview. Hope y'all enjoy it.
All right, welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. We got a guest I'm very familiar with, a colleague of mine at NBC, Brad Faxon, 8-time PGA Tour winner. At Bradford, what's the word, man? Where are you joining from? Looks like you're at home.
Good morning, Smiley. Yes, I had a rare 2 weeks at home. I know we crave during the season. We get ready to go on a big swing with our U.S. and British Open.
Oh, gosh, I can't
back
wait.
Back in the U.S. Senior Open, but it's nice to be home. I'm going to see Rory tomorrow before he's practicing this week as he gets ready for his chance at another major championship.
Well, I tell you what, it's kind of nice that y'all are both in the same town. You know, I guess you guys started working, was it back in 2018 when you and Rory started working together? I mean, it's got to be convenient just to be able to pop over, take a look pretty quickly versus having to hop on a plane.
Yeah, that makes things a lot easier. He lives about 10 to 15 minutes away at the Bears Club. And he texted me early this morning. This guy, it seems like he gets up early all the time. Michael Bannon, his longtime coach, is here for a couple days to work. And Rory said one of the great things about being at the Bears Club now is, you know, most of the snowbirds have gone back up north somewhere. And I always think May is too early. I have to go up to Cape Cod this coming weekend, and it's never going to get over 62 or 3. And it's going to be a little bit rainy. It's always windy. And I'm like, May and early June down here in Florida are nice. And Rory said it is empty at the Bears Club. So he's getting some really good practice in.
Well, I was going to wait to get into this Rory stuff later, but I feel like I need to just get straight away into just winning at the Masters, man, and completing the Grand Slam and what that was like for you as a coach, because, you know, at the US Open and all really the other close calls along the way as a coach, I'm sure had to be so gratifying, you know, watching somebody that wants it as bad as he does, be able to go and do it. You know, for you, what was that like as a coach?
It's funny because, you know, you and I worked together, like you said, on NBC, and I was working the Masters live from, the daytime live from, with Carr Banks and Aaron Oberhoser and Noda and a host of guests. But what's remarkable about that week is that live from during the day, it's, you know, the prelude to the coverage that goes on for the Masters is the most watched show of the year, the most watched Golf Channel show of the year. And as Rory got off, you know, to a good start and didn't finish well the first day, then had his great Friday round there to get into contention, you know, the eyeballs on him every week are,
oh, it's absurd.
I don't know the burden that he has. And then every year, here's the first major of the year. Uh-huh. It's the Masters, the one that he has to win. And I can't imagine. And Smiley, I feel like most of the world wanted Rory to win this. And when he got up on the 18th hole to have that 5-footer for par to win the Masters, you know, CBS put up that graphic to win the career Grand Slam. And think about that. When do you ever see that graphic? We saw Tiger do it 20 years earlier. Or so, and then to see that, and then misses the putt. Now he has to go back into a playoff where Justin Rose is rested and ready. He had made 10 birdies, and it looked like Rose almost holed his second shot there, and Rory hits that beautiful wedge shot from almost the same distance he did in regulation and peels it back down the hill to, you know, outside gimme, right? That was right. Three of the longest feet you've ever seen. And here goes that graphic again from the world to watch. But, you know, it's funny because we're supposed to be not biased or prejudiced when we talk.
Sure.
And I'm in that awkward or interesting position of having been part of Rory's team for so long now. And to reach that goal, to do it at the Masters. I always thought, you know, Rory's going to definitely win more majors before he won this Masters. I didn't know that he'd win the Masters before he won another one of those majors. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be easier to maybe take the pressure off him a little bit, sell from the Grand Slam. Hey, maybe I can win a PGA or win the British Open. But for him to do this, I just got this Golf Digest in the mail. Forever Rory. And a rare look at the career Grand Slam. Nobody would fault him if he said, you know what, I'm good. I don't have to do this anymore.
Well, you know, take me back to when y'all first started working together and you look at him as a putter when y'all first started working together on the greens. How much has his approach changed and how much technical stuff do you feel like he's cleaned up over the years to a point now where it's pretty easy to maintain?
Yeah, the first week we met, he sent me a text. I was still playing a little bit on the Champions Tour, asked me if I could meet him on a Monday before he was going to drive up to Orlando that night with his wife Erica to play at Arnold Palmer Invitational. And we met in the locker room. I was nervous because, you know, here's one of the great players in the world who'd been struggling for a few years with his putting. Part was...
Yeah, what was he really struggling with at that time? Was it just everything with the putter? Was it just holding him back?
I think there was, yes. You know, he had been streaky, and that drives people crazy, especially great players. Mm-hmm. He had won tournaments, certainly, in 3 years. But I don't feel like he ever... was scoring better than he hit it. You know, he's always hitting it better than he scored. And that's a really frustrating way to play the game. And it's funny that the Seminole Pro member was a couple weeks earlier. And selfishly, Billy Andrade and I had approached Rory and his dad after they had played in the morning to see if they would consider playing in the CVS Charity Classic. We played together in that, Smiley.
Yeah.
And you know, Rory was one of the bigger names that we hadn't had come to Rhode Island. We had raised tons of money for different charities. And we were trying to appeal to him to say, hey, look, this would be good for you. You know, only going to be good for us. And as we were standing on the, you know, where the old swimming pool was at Seminole, Adam Scott was getting ready to hit a tee shot off the first tee. And he made this awkward looking practice stroke. And, you know, Adam's on practice swing and Adam Scott, you're like, what's he doing? And he had gotten a lesson from the most popular teacher in the world, George Gankus.
I remember that time.
You remember that? And yes. Rory made a funny comment. He said, God, can you believe Adam Scott got a lesson from Rory, from George Gankus? And, you know, he made that kind of the club went out, kind of that Matt Wolf looking rehearsal. And Rory made this comment. He goes, when I hit a driver, I don't think about an effing thing. And I'm like, oh. And, you know, I just kind of thought that was funny. We all laughed and Adam hit a nice drive. And we walked off hoping that Rory would consider playing in our CVS Charity Classic. And that's 2 weeks later. I got a text from a 561 area code number that I didn't have in my cell phone. It was Rory on a Saturday late afternoon. I had just finished my second round. He goes, hey, can you meet me at the Bears Club on that Monday afternoon at 4? And I'm like, gosh, I wasn't going to fly home till Monday. I wasn't going to land till 4 in Fort Lauderdale. I'm like, God, if I want to come home to see Rory, I got to do this on the red eye. So I changed my flights. You know, it costs a few extra bucks to come back home. And I called my wife. I said, Dory, I'm going to come home on the red eye tomorrow night, not Monday. She goes, why? I go, well, Rory McIlroy wants me to watch him hit some putts. She goes, oh, so you'll come home for Rory. But yeah, you know, and I'm like, oh, boy. And she goes, you like him more than me? I go, I do right now. And, you know, it was pretty funny. But anyway, you know, I took this seriously going over there. I was equipped with, you know, coaches all have some kind of a camera, iPad, iPhone, some kind of golf app. But I really didn't think that Rory's problems were going to be as much technical as they were maybe, you know, mentally. How are you doing this? And, you know, he's one of the most gifted, physically gifted players I've ever seen. And I called Michael Bannon. That, you know, we mentioned him earlier at the start of the show about being Rory's longtime swing coach and only swing coach. And I asked him, what do you guys do best? How do you guys work well together? And Michael's a thoughtful guy. He's a couple of years older than me, so he's mid-60s. And he said, you know, Brad, we do most of our work away from the tournaments. In a perfect world, we'd work on two or three different things, feels, thoughts. And I would let Rory decide which one of those he can use and should use when he plays. But we get very little work done at tournaments. So here we were in a situation where he's getting ready to go play a tournament that week, a course that obviously fits him well. And Arnold Palmer, who was one of everybody's heroes. Mm-hmm. So we went into the locker room and I said something to him. I said, you know, when we were standing on the lawn at Seminole and you were watching Adam Scott make that funny practice swing, and you said you don't think about anything when you hit a driver. I said, would you be okay thinking about nothing when you were putting, but putting well and not knowing what you're doing? He goes, I would kill for that right now. Mm. And that was a good trigger for me to kind of like, okay, I think I can help this. So I filmed some stuff, showed him, you know, what I thought looked like a little bit like standing over the ball too much going down. You know, when you struggle, when we struggle, you have too much of a checklist, too many thoughts. And then it gets in the way of instinct. It gets in the way of athleticism. And, you know, we don't think of putting as something that you're necessarily athletic with, do you? You know, you think about putting as something anybody could be able to do.
You're static, right? You know,
when you get static, when you get still, when you get careful, you know, Bob Rotella, who was a big influence in my life, he always said careful kills when you're talking about golf and putting. And, you know, we talked about that concept and about continuous motion. And I gave Rory three different clubs to putt with other than his putter. And that was helpful to him right then because there's no manual on how to putt with a lob wedge or a five wood. And he just went back to his instinct. And it was really, that was the start of it. And letting, you know, him control this thing more than me. And, you know, we hit lightning in a bottle. And the funny part about the story is after about 45 or 50 minutes, he had said to me as we walked out on the green at the Bears Club, you know, and Jack Nicklaus always made those greens pretty quick going into March and April into the Masters. So the players, there's so many players, there's 25 or 30 PGA Tour players there that are members. He would let those greens get fast and firm for the that stretch run. And Rory, when we walked out there, it was so windy that afternoon. He goes, if you weren't here, there's no way I would have practiced today putting. And there was nobody out there. I think Bud Cauley came out for like 5 minutes and left and said, that's a waste of time. And, you know, by the time, you know, after being out there for 45 minutes, he's like, I didn't have to say much anymore because I'm like, okay, I think he's in a good spot. But two things I missed. When I walked out there on to the putting green, he had asked me two things. And this is where I think coaches have to get to learn their players, right? You have to learn idiosyncrasies, tendencies of a player. But Rory said, look, I want to go back to my 34-inch putter. He had been using a 33-inch putter. And I said, how long have you been using that shorter putter? He goes, well, I've been using this for a couple of years now, but I won the four previous majors with this putter, and it's 34 inches. And I'm like, that's okay with me. And
wait, did he ask if it was okay if he can use that?
Yeah. He goes, are you okay if I go back to 34? I said, yeah, of course. And he said, yeah, I feel like I'm more comfortable with 34 inches. And, you know, I'm not bent over as much. And then he says, do you mind if I'm a little bit open? And I'm like, well, there's a lot of great putters that I played with that were open. And Jack Nicklaus would be the first one.
David Toms.
Ben Crenshaw, David Toms. Tom Watson always said to me he felt better when he was a little bit open. I played feeling I'm a little bit open. So I'm like, what am I going to say? Doubt what a player likes to feel. And I said to him, too, because, you know, he had a very well-known putting coach that probably was telling him exactly what he needed to do technically with his stroke. And I knew he was going to be there at Bay Hill the next day. And I said to Rory, I said, nothing we talk about will ever, I'll never talk about this stuff until you talk about it. And, you know, if you say something, then I'll say something, but don't worry about me telling anybody, because I know what it's like. Cause I cheated on a lot of my coaches and I had a lot of them, but I think that let him sigh, you know, breathe a little sigh of relief. And, you know, we before we finished, I said, all right, let's have a putting contest. And, you know, I think putting contests, this is really the essence of putting, right? We all did that growing up. You did that in college.
Did you wear them out?
Well,
because you're the coach, like, you don't want to,
you know, that game you play back and forth, right? We stand on one hole and you putt at the same time and the balls cross. And this particular day, the closest two holes to each other on the big putting green, they were like 30 feet apart. It was windy. The greens were fast. It was taking a while to make aces, but I got up to a 4-2 lead. We're playing to five. And I mouthed off and Bart asked, I said, hey, if I beat you in this putting contest and you go up and you win Bay Hill, you got to tell everybody Brad Faxon beat you in a putting contest. And he laughed. And then he made three of the next five to beat me.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, oh, man, I woke him up. And he said, you know what? When I go up and win Bay Hill this week, I'm going to tell everybody I beat you in a putting contest. And, you know, it was kind of cool because I'm kind of curious, you know, how often had somebody said anything to him about winning? And he went that week to Bay Hill. And early in the week, I think he played with Adam Scott. I'm sorry, with Justin Rose. And he hit it out of bounds on Friday on 18. And it was the first time, I think, in a long time he scored better than he hit it, because he putted very well. And he went on to win by four and had a great Sunday round. And, you know, it was lightning in a bottle. But we've been together now for 7+ years. I think he doesn't need me to stand there and watch him hit putts every single day. That's for sure. You know, at the Masters this year, you know, we had spent a little bit of time the week before at home, like Michael Bannon said, and Rory doesn't need me to stand behind him and watch every single putt. He doesn't need me to tell him how to warm up. But at the same time, I think he's gotten to the point where he knows what his 2, 3, or 4 tendencies might be and how to fix them.
It seems like when he was, I guess, I can't remember what the years were, but I just always remember the putter being kind of chased down the line. Like the putter head, like almost looked like it was going past his head, and that it looked like it was struggling for him to really release the putter head, or covering the golf ball, if you will. Was that something that you noticed, that he had a bit of a push tendency to maybe where he's just chasing it down the line, and now it just, it swings beautifully on an arc.
Yeah. So if you think about it, and if you, you know, I talked to his father, who's a member at Seminole, and friends with Michael Bannon, you know, when he was taught to play, he had hands forward. He had that stroke similar to Phil Mickelson, a blocking style sort of release. And, you know, that's something that he had embedded in him from early on. And
it's good.
You know,
I'm sure it was good on slow greens, though, growing up in Ireland.
Probably growing up on those slower greens. You know, he had an offset blade style putter, which maybe would encourage that a little bit. And now that he's been using this spider mallet for 5 years, 6 years now, that maybe encourages a little bit more release. The simplest drill, and I would encourage anybody that's listening to do this, is right hand only practice putting. And
I've
and that helped
for years.
He was pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
And that's a good feeling for anyone, and for Rory to feel like at impact, the shaft's back to vertical. You're using the true loft of the putter, and then the putter head passes the hands. It's the opposite a little bit. And he's really liked that putting drill. You can feel casual about it, which is kind of the mood you're trying to have when you putt. And I honestly don't think he can do enough of that, because it's got that nice release where, you know, the vertical release of the putter where the head passes the grip, and then the horizontal release where the toe passes the heel. Mm-hmm. One simple little drill. And, you know, you're trying to let players do something that allows the putter to work the right way without having to think about how it works the right way. And I think that's been a good combination for him.
Well, you mentioned it earlier, and talking a little bit about swing instructors and cheating on your coaches. Well, you and I are both kind of cut from the same cloth, as in we're both naturally gifted on the greens. It comes easy to us. You know, like when we get on a green, there's just intrinsically things that we can't explain of how we know it, but we just do. The golf club, swinging a golf club. I was not nearly quite as naturally gifted and talented with specific things that make somebody an elite ball striker. I've had to really learn information as I've gone. I've always been a good wedge player, but the longer stuff I've always struggled with a little bit when it comes just with some technique stuff. For you, Brad, was it difficult when you were playing and having to go bounce around to swing instructors with a bunch of information and staying consistent to it? Because you just talked about how simple you coach and how simple the putting is for you, but the full swing, quite the opposite. And it led you to a lot of success, but also, do you wish you would have just stuck with some one person along the way?
Yeah. Smiley, I have a list. It's a torn sheet here of all the different people I've paid to have lessons from, and it gets close to 100.
Oh my God. You got me beat, man.
Chronologically, and I'm trying to do it from the coaching trees, you know, who worked for Harmon, sure, who worked for Ledbetter, sure, who worked for McLean. And there's a lot of them, but when I did play my best, to answer your question, I stuck with the same guy for a lengthy period of time, whether it was Jim McLean, David Ledbetter, you know, I had journeys with them. And then some more obscure coaches that helped me out, that I stayed with for a while. But to me, it's some of the stuff that you need to do is hard to explain. I have a really good friend named Adam Oates. Adam Oates was one of the greatest hockey players that ever lived, one of the all-time assist leaders. He's coached, I think he coaches 75 players on in the NHL now, and body awareness, puck and stick handling drills. And, you know, when you talk about other sports, it's hard to explain sometimes. Like if you're playing hockey and you have to pass the puck to, you know, one of your teammates that's skating fast down the other side of the ice, and you have to decide how to release it, at what height, is it going to stay along the ice? Is it going to be over a defender's stick? You know, how do you teach that? And I would call that touch. And now I hear so many people, you got to get better at lag putting and distance control. And, you know, we did all that stuff without having a name for it. You know, you just got good at it by practicing a lot. And some of it you can't explain. And sometimes experimenting around with a different putter or trying to have different feels can help you out without going down a path that I went down with a full swing. And I think for Rory, one of the things that he's so good at, you know, first of all, he's talented, right? I mean, he's one of these guys with speed. How can you say this guy who's, you know, a few years ago, he was 5'8 or 9, weighed 165 pounds. Now he's close to 180. He's as strong as there is. He's hitting it as hard as he has ever in his career. How do you teach that? And there's certain things that you have to spend time doing it. And I know for Rory right now, he's not going home at night worrying about his putting stroke. And that's,
yeah, for sure.
If that's my job, that's a good thing. His statistics have been better the last several years. I think going into last week at the PGA, he was 10th or 11th in putting statistics. And you know, guys like Scotty and Rory, if they crack the top 50 in putting, they're going to be impossible to beat, never mind the top 10. And it's just great to see him feel so much better about that part of his game.
Man, you and I were you at Working Hero this past year? I'm trying to remember if you were.
I haven't been there. I will be there this year. I can't wait to do that.
It's a fun event, but I remember I was in the booth this past year, and on Thursday, all of a sudden, we see Scotty pop up with the claw grip or the saw grip, and we're just like, what in the world? You know, what is this guy doing? You know, he just won 7 times this last year, won an Olympic gold medal. And next thing you know, he's got this whole new grip. And like you said, I mean, Scotty's all the way up in the top 15 in putting this year. And the question I want to ask you about this is for someone like Scotty, who was as poor with the putter, I mean, he was, what was he, outside the top 150, outside the top 170 in putting only a couple years ago. And we constantly talked about it leading into shows, the end of shows. Like, if Scotty can just putt average, he's going to win a lot of golf tournaments. And for someone like him to make technical changes like he did and see this much improvement, for you as a coach, are you someone to suggest, hey, if you were able to get into this saw position, it would clean up the technical part of your stroke? Or would you let somebody kind of lead you to that point?
Well, I don't know how to do that. And I say it frankly, when a guy decides that something's happening, and it's usually if you're conventionally gripped and right-handed, you know, if your right hand starts doing something, getting a little too involved, I guess is the right way to say it, then you experiment. Do you go to left hand low? Do you go to saw or claw variations? Do you go to the broomstick? I know I spent a little time, about a year maybe, with Lucas Glover a few years ago, and it was one of the several people that was helping him to, hey, let's go. We got to try something. It can't get worse, right? When you go to the alternative methods. And I don't know with Scotty if this was Phil Kenyon, who's been very helpful to him, obviously, or if it was Randy Smith and Scotty that say, let's try this because it'll get that right hand. I don't know if it's a.
Yeah, it was. I think it was Phil, because he was saying that the tendency, which I found really interesting in his golf swing, is that typically his right arm would get a little on the high side, and then that would cause some issues in his ball striking. So right side would get a little high. And so same with the putting, is that they noticed that his right hand would get a little bit too on top of the putter, and that it was causing inconsistencies in the stroke, maybe a little bit of a loop. And it's funny too, how tendencies in somebody's ball striking and what they do, how it's all the time, it translates into what they do wrong in their putting stroke.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how many people I teach, like amateur golfers, and I'll look at their setup, and I teach with Jason Bale at Jupiter Hills, who just got, you know, PGA of America's Teacher of the Year, Instructor of the Year. And, you know, we have this little saying, it's hard to make a golfer worse by making their setup better. And if I see something in a player with their setup and I say, hey, I think you could use maybe a little bit more right side bend, something, I'm making it up now, but they'll go, oh my gosh, that's what Jason told me. That's what I do in my full swing. You know, those tendencies tend to be the same. And I, you know, if Scheffler gets a little high with his right side at address, and I just think, you know, we're talking about instructors and you have to get to know your player and their player's tendency. How about caddies and their players? Like Ted Scott gets asked as they make the turn in the Sunday of the PGA Championship, you know, I'm hitting these drives or going too far left. What do you think? And Ted knows his tendencies and he wants to keep something simple, but he doesn't want to make up any BS. He says, I think you're aiming too far left, aim more to the right. And what a simple solution. And he pipes that drive down the 10th hole. And basically that was the turning point for Scheffler to win the PGA.
It sure was. And what have you been playing much golf, Brad? Because I remember when we were in Mexico at the beginning of our NBC swing, I mean, you're off to go and get these, what was the PRP injections? Is that what they're called? What was it? The, where they spin the blood.
Yep,
I know you had a bad accident.
I got a bad right knee. Then I had broken my left shoulder, falling off a bicycle. And then I did some stem cells down there at
stem cells. That's what it was
at Renew, that beautiful place down there where, you know, it's not legal in the United States to do some of the stem cell therapy with some of the FDA approval stuff, but it's been helpful. My right knee and left shoulder are bad. I played yesterday with my wife who just walked in, Dory, in the mixed scramble event.
Ooh,
finished
win?
Third. So another top third finish. but I got asked, I had dinner last night with Ian Baker Finch and some of his buddies, and they want me to come out there and play a little bit later this morning. And there's a big storm going on right now, so it might get delayed, but I still love to play. I stink, but I can go out there and always try and find something.
Would you start back playing again? Because I remember you were in a sling like late February.
Yeah, I had I fell off the bike in October, kind of a mountain bike, and crashed and hurt everything. But my arm broke, the radius bone right by the elbow. And I was lucky because I didn't need surgery or anything. It just got weak and sore.
Ugh,
and my shoulder's a little bit messed
terrible
up.
Sleeping.
You know, yeah. And I at some point probably going to need some work on the shoulder, but I can still swing close to pain-free. And, you know, when you have your buddies, it's hard to kind of say no to them. You know, Baker Finch, he's crazy because, you know, he's our counterpart on CBS. He's been doing it for 26 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays every day when he's home. I'm like, ah.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sore. I've played two of the last 3 days. I'm dying right now. I'm not built for it anymore.
Then you're young.
I know I am.
Hope you are enjoying Smiley's conversation with Brad Faxon. Some great stuff about Rory there, just the process of improving his putting. And this interview is not necessarily going to shift gears, but progress a little bit because Brad is a member, and he has been a member, I guess, since the early 2000s at unanimously the number one golf course in America, Pine Valley. And that is a special, special place. It is a huge piece of property. There's all sorts of fun things to do there. And we have some fun stories to get into there, but we're going to do that with the help of our friends at Shipsticks. Because what better way to ensure that you can have all the fun that you like to have at Pine Valley than making sure your clubs arrive there and you're not playing a set of rentals. Although I'd say probably the rentals at Pine Valley, probably better than a lot of other places, I'd say. I can make that assumption safely. Shipsticks gets you from your front door to four easier than ever. They'll pick up your golf clubs from your home or office and deliver them on time, guaranteed to your golf destination anywhere in and outside the United States. No more airport headaches, no more lugging heavy bags, just easy, stress-free travel for golfers like you. Smiley, do you want to tease any Pine Valley stories before I wrap this thing up and get them back to the interview?
Well, he probably could have told Pine Valley stories talking about Brad Faxon for multiple episodes. It's just such a unique place. It's more than just golf. The people that you see, you know, just kind of how it's laid out. You know, you end up seeing everybody that's on property, and it's just such a cool experience.
And the Red Snapper Bisque.
That's right.
Can't forget about that. Mm-hmm. Lots of good things going on at Pine Valley. And by the way, one of the better stats I think I've ever heard in the history of the game of golf. In connection to Pine Valley.
Stay tuned.
It might be the best stat. Like, it might be more impressive than anything we've seen in terms of Tiger Woods ball striking and Scottie Scheffler. It is a phenomenal stat. So Shipsticks. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm not sure this stat probably in connection, making sure that this person had the right set of clubs, thanks to Shipsticks, probably helped them achieve the statistic. The supporting benefits include white glove service, complimentary insurance, real-time tracking, door-to-door service, international shipping. And it's for any occasion. It's perfect for buddies trips, like the one that Smiley recently went to Pine Valley, business trips, even family vacations where managing kids, strollers, and extra luggage can ruin your vacation before it's even begun. You can enjoy 20% off your next shipment by using the promo code Smiley. That's S-M-Y-L-I-E. And of course, as always, we will link we'll put a little link in the description on our podcast and YouTube here so you can use that if you want to take your club somewhere you're excited to go play. Let's get right back to Brad Faxon.
Well, that means have you made any trips up to Pine Valley this year?
I've made two, as a matter of fact. And, you know, going up there, having been a member, I've been a member since 2005, so 20 years now. It's always the greatest trip to take to bring people to, especially people that have never been, because it always over delivers. Mm-hmm. And like you would be, you still want to prove yourself, you know, you want to shoot a good score. And I always try and tell my guests, look, enjoy the walk. Don't worry about if you hit a ball out of play, because you're probably not going to find it. And I'm guilty of that. I want to shoot the lowest score.
Well, sure you do. What's your favorite part about Pine Valley?
I think every hole, you could literally stand on every tee box and say, this is my favorite hole at Pine Valley, and nobody would make fun of you. I think when you invite someone that's never been there and they see it for the first time, the joy they have. And I always tell the people, as good as the experience of the golf course there is, when you drive through the little gate to come into Pine Valley, its own borough, and you see it for the first time live, you can't imagine it. And I've been lucky enough. I think, you know, Chris Stutz, who's one of my buddies and a member at Pine Valley, he lives down the street here at Old Palm. And he's got me more active there, and I've played a lot of member golf there. I don't know that it's as fun off the course, as you know, as it is on the course there.
Yes, it's a very good time when you show up for dinner that evening with all the green jackets and everybody's got their own table, talking about how they played that day. And of course, it's a really good hang outside of the dinner, just to the room next to that, just sitting with a lot of people that you end up meeting and you keep in touch with. It's a very always somebody fun you run into.
Everybody has a story, whether it's a green jacketed guy or not. And one of my friends that came with us a few weeks ago shot 74. He's, you know, he's about a 2 or 3 handicap, and to shoot 74,
that's pretty strong.
Pretty strong. And the smile hasn't left his face. But, you know, you can go to Pine Valley and play the short course there. They have a 10-hole short course. A lot of holes are replicas of the.
I loved it too.
Second course, so you know, you're on a golf cart, you can play some music, you can smoke a cigar, and then the practice range there is as good a range as you can find, isn't it? Two-sided.
Well, you know, our host when I went was Eli Manning, and Eli took all of us out to go hit some golf balls, and it took us about 15 minutes to find the range because Eli couldn't remember where the range was.
I might use that, yes.
Next time you see him, just say, hey, can you give me a ride to the range, or just tell me where it's at.
Well, you know, and if you haven't been there a lot and he's a newer member, finding, you know, your way in the dark on a golf cart to the cottages.
Oh, it was light out. It was that's why I get
props. That's worse than.
he was leading us to the abyss, but we had a great time and he was a fantastic host. And Ricky Fowler made a hole in one while we were there. So that was a lot of fun.
Get out. What hole did he make a hole in one?
Ricky made an ace on the third hole. And as the story goes, JT, I was playing with JT, Ricky, and Justin's buddy, Willie Sellers, who I played junior golf with, played at Alabama. And Justin gets onto the tee at 3, and it was that front left pin, about maybe 175, 180. to that front left hole location. It's definitely a funnel pin. You can make a hole in one to that pin, but it's a very, very tight. You got to hit your number to be able to do it. So Justin gets up there and he got off to a really hot start. He was flagging everything, and he gets there and he said, "Somebody needs to film this. I'm about to make a hole in one." And he hits this beautiful high towering 7-iron and plugs it into the front bunker. I was like, "Good shot, man." And so we're just giving him crap about it. And I guess one of the other caddies just like kept the phone open as Ricky went, and he hits this beautiful high, like the right shot shape. It starts like right center of the green, moves towards the middle as it then lands right on top of that like slope, right at the crest there. And then it rolls 20 feet right into the hole. And we just went nuts.
You could all see it go into that pin too.
We all could. And then Eli, Colt Nose were in the group in front of us, and they had just teed off at 4 walking up, and they heard the yell. So then all of a sudden, you know, we're all on the green celebrating a hole in one. And there's also a deer right of the green that I hit right after Ricky hit his 7. Seven. I was like, "How am I going to follow this up? Okay, let's just miss it to the right of the bunker."
That's outstanding. You know, one of the great golf stats in history, Ryder Cup, Walker Cup captain and player Buddy Marucci is a member there. And Buddy Marucci has made an eagle on every single hole at Pine Valley except for the 14th hole. He's eagled 17 holes. And he made a birdie on the par 3 14th, but he's never made a one on that hole. But how about that for a career? What do you?
That's the most bizarre stat I've ever heard.
No, it's unbelievable. Every single hole, which means a lot, means something. He played a lot of Pine Valley, right? And then he hit good irons.
But that's absurd. I don't think I've ever heard a stat
absurd.
Like that.
Absurd. What are they? That's called the career ringer, right? Your ringer. What's your best score on each hole? And he's 2 under on every hole except for the 14th.
I can't say that at my home course here in town that I've made a lot of eagles out there, but considering at Pine Valley, the shots that you have to hit, that's absurd. Oh man. Well, next time I see Buddy, I might have to ask him about that.
You got to ask him about it.
Yeah.
He must see if he just played. Every time he plays 14.
Yeah, I didn't know if he just took a shag bag to every single hole to where eventually he just made eagles. But well, as we wrap this interview, Brad, I have to talk a little bit about NBC and the U.S. Open and the Ryder Cup coming up our schedule. How pumped are you? I mean, I tell everybody, I think the events that we have at NBC, you know, you need to throw in the players with that, and of course the playoffs. We get to call some pretty fun events.
There's no doubt about it. And this year, you know, with the domination with Rory and Scotty, the two best players in the world, continuing, it would be unbelievable to see those two guys play.
Throwing Bryson, man.
They play the majors. It totally different ways. I played in the 1983 U.S. Open at Oakmont as an amateur. It was my last. I just graduated from Furman. I'd played on the Walker Cup. I qualified. And I've never seen anything as more difficult than Oakmont. And I think Oakmont likes to brag that they slow the greens down for the U.S. Open. I think they say all we need is 2 weeks to prepare. We don't need to grow any rough because it's always tough. This year, the rough is already a foot high.
It looks around like it.
And if you ask anybody, what's the hardest course you played? And I don't mean in miserable conditions where it's cold or windy, but just on a standard day. I always say the three hardest courses in America start with Oakmont, where we're going to see the Open, Oak Lind Hills, and Oak Hill. They're just so hard. But Oakmont is above and beyond the hardest course I've ever played. I have yet to be on site to see that renovated course by Gil Hance and what he's done. But everybody tells me how hard it is. We're going to see 300-yard par threes. I can't imagine how long it's going to take to play some of these rounds there. And I've heard the fairway bunkers, the way they're designed, when your ball gets in there, it kind of gets towards the bottom and towards the lips. So it's really hard to advance the ball. I think that's one thing the founder, Harold Founds, is, I think that's how you say his last name, Howard or Harold, didn't want you to be able to reach the green. So part of me wants this to be, you know, where the players are bloody when they finish, where, you know, I don't want to see any rain.
So you want an over par
Yeah, I don't want to see a final round Johnny Miller 63. I know Johnny doesn't want to see that either, but I'd like to see this where, man, what would it be like if four or five over par wins this tournament, and where you walk off a par five making a five and you said, I just did pretty well.
And do you think another Irishman can win at Port Rush this year?
I really do. I really do. I've heard a rumor that first hole.
When he hit it out of bounds on, right?
Well, Rory hit a two iron or one iron off the tee there and pull hooked it into the mm-hmm. out of bounds. Now, that was a kind of an in-course out of bounds that they had set up for gallery control and some sponsor suites. And I don't think that is going to be out of bounds this year.
TIO now?
I think there's a new tee, too. I think it's back farther. Mm. So that hole is not going to be just a layup necessarily, depending on the wind conditions. But all my friends that have gone over there to play, they always try and argue what's a better course, County Down or Port Rush. And to have Shane win there in 14, Shane Lowry said the last time I saw him at the PGA at Quail, yeah. He said, Rory's taking the pressure off me going back there. So yeah, imagine that if one of those two guys comes back and is in contention the last day.
Shoot, man. I just remember Rory's walk up on Friday at Port Rush when he had, you know, he was out way outside the cut line and then has such a magical Friday to almost make the cut, and just what the spectators, the amount of noise and support they were giving him on a Friday. Just can you imagine what that would be like on a Sunday? So that's going to be fun to watch. And then, of course, we'll end here with the Ryder Cup, Brad. I think the European team, if you would have told me 2 or 3 years ago that their lineup was going to have depth, young talent, and the harder lineup to choose, I would have said you are lying, because I think this United States team is very top heavy. There's going to be unproven depth that are most likely might make this team. So what are your impressions when you look at the Ryder Cup heading up?
I couldn't agree more. I was just looking at the list 2 days ago thinking, you know, if I'm the captain of either team, who's going to be on my team? Who am I going to pick? How does the Live golfers, how do they be part of the team? You know, you think about, you know, John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton, adding to the European team, the firepower that they have. And I think they'll be the deeper of the teams, it looks like. And you look at some of these young American players like Ben Griffin. I mean, will he be a first time Ryder Cupper at Bethpage? And I've always thought, you know, this Keegan Bradley story is remarkable. 38 years old, a captain, youngest captain since Arnold back in 1963. And, you know, he got that call from Seth Waugh last year to be the captain, and it surprised him. And I've always thought, you know, if Keegan at 38 qualifies, he says, look, I'm only going to play if I finish in the top six. Well, if he made it into the top 12, he would be picked by any other captain, certainly.
100%.
And if Seth had called him not to tell him, hey, you're going to be the Ryder Cup captain, if he said, look, would you rather be captain or rather play at Bethpage in 25? He'd say play all day, wouldn't he? So I think Keegan needs to be like, hey, I could be a big part of this team. And, you know, Keegan's a guy that he's versatile, right? He can play either format because he's mm-hmm. such a good hitter of the ball. Mm-hmm. And he can play with any other player. I mean, there are certain times when you make a pick where that particular player is only good in one format, mm-hmm. or only is good with one or two other players. I think Captain Bradley would be a great player. And you could easily say to any of those assistant captains, you be the captain, let me play. And the PGA of America would surely give them that spot.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see who rounds out the teams for both Luke Donald and Keegan Bradley. And, of course, you and I will both be there to be on the call. Can't wait for you to ask me how the lie is, because I'll tell you how the lie is, and I'll tell you what the word is down on the ground. So, Brad, it's been fun, man. We've been talking about doing this for a while.
I'm glad we got to do this finally. I can't wait to get up there in Pittsburgh with you. And when we walk the course, I think both you and I will be saying, aren't you glad you're walking?
Oh, my gosh. I would need a hole in my pocket to play Oakmont.
It's probably happened there before.
It definitely has. It definitely has. Well, Brad, I appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you up in Oakmont. See you, buddy.
All right, Smiley. Thanks so much.
Well, there it is. Another fun conversation with one of the guys who has some of the best insight on the game of golf around, with Brad Faxon. I again, as a fly on the wall, was thrilled with all that. But, you know, I'll say this. If I wasn't holding my 7-month-old daughter, I thought about sending her down to grab a putter with some of the stuff that Brad was talking about, doing right-hand-only drills, you know, the release in the toe. But unfortunately, I had to hold my daughter. So I was there anything for you that really stood out in terms of, I want to go work on this, or this was really interesting?
Well, I think with Brad, you know, him and I talk all the time about certain things. There was nothing that really caught me a ton off guard. But one of the favorite things I think that any person can do that's lacking creativity is taking multiple clubs out on the putting green.
That's
something that I really haven't done, but would be something that I would be willing to try if I was kind of losing touch around the greens. Like, just grab a 5-wood, grab 3 random clubs in your bag, and then start to try to get your feel back. So that would be something that would be a takeaway for me to practically be able to go and do.
I thought that was super interesting of just trying to kind of get away from robotic, as we often can fall into that as putters, of, you know, what's the alignment of my head and shoulders and everything like that. Am I open or closed? And Brad's got handing Rory a 5-wood and a lob wedge and just trying to kind of bring some of that athleticism back in. I thought that was super interesting.
You know, it's funny too. Yeah, you know, what takeaways would be, you know, I'm so used to having conversations with Brad where I'm not looking at his face. You know, I'm out on the ground, and you got to have a lot of, you know, just you got to know a person, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you're working on the ground, you have to know somebody's cadences and, you know, just how they speak, and you need to spend a lot of time with them just so you know what conversations you can get into when there is some dead air. So with Brad, he's easy, right? Like if we're on the putting green and I have just a general thought about, hey, do you think the greens being this speed favors this type of player right now, or do you think this amount of wind is affecting putts inside of 10 feet? And, you know, anything, well, I mean, anything in the game of golf is safe to ask, but specifically around the putting, he always just adds such great value to our coverage. So does a great job of NBC, and it's been fun to work with.
Well, hope you all enjoyed that conversation and have some stuff. Look, we gave you some Jason Duffner short game tips last week. We got some putting tips from Brad Faxon this week. You know, I don't know who we're going to have on next to just get you guys dialed in. The summer's ramping up. I got the member this week at Hope Valley. I mean, I got to get dialed, man. This is top tier information. So selfishly, I'm loving it. Let's go next to some competition that is slightly more important than the Hope Valley member, the Division I Men's Golf Championships. We have an individual winner, Michael Lasasso, who is a really interesting study. He's a guy who's from around here, the Triangle in North Carolina, started at NC State and then transferred to Ole Miss, has a super interesting golf swing. It almost reminds me of like Joaquin Niemann, the way he sort of contorts his body and gets into these really flexible positions that I'll never dream of getting in ever again.
Well, but he works with Chase Duncan.
The Own Your Golf Game. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that he teaches like a certain style, or at least every player that I see posted has this unique way in which they get the club to the top. And then it's like shallow immediately out of the top and then just rotate. And Michael Lasasso, Akshay Bhatia are two players that, you know, Caleb Surratt, all three of those guys, elite ball strikers, hit fades primarily. I've seen Lasasso on TikTok for years. This is a guy that wears the short shorts, like thunder thighs.
He's got no more than 4 inches of inseam on those things. And it might be getting smaller. It might be down to 3 inches.
The kid's always been so pure, like watching his golf swing. And so not surprising at all to see that he's had success. I've seen him in the top 20 on the PGA Tour U pretty much all year, and now winning the NCAAs. I'm curious to see what that jump for him gets him all the way up to, because the official world golf ranking I'm curious to see what he is in the Wagger, because I think he was in somewhere around the top 20 heading into the week. So let me just generally.
I wonder if it updates
it'll be after the week. Imagine he's 11th,
yeah,
and that's without that's without the win. So he's a player that he won at Old Waverly this year, won the second to Tallahassee. Great, yeah. Really good player. Ole Miss has had an incredible year. It's been a program that's never, you know, got to this, to the point where they are now, to where they're, you know, in the fall, they were the best team. The fall, I think they won multiple times. A solid lineup. They got a great coach there in Chris Malloy. And so we'll see what they do in match play.
Yeah, if you've not seen Michael Assasso hit a golf ball, like, just go look up, go find him on TikTok or Instagram. The guy absolutely
not hard to find.
Punishes it. Yeah, it is. It's a very unique swing. But so Michael Assasso, your individual champion, and his Ole Miss Rebels, they got in as the final team. They're the eighth seed in this match play bracket. Let me run through this bracket with you. Arizona State.
So did Florida State with Luke Clanton, were they close to making it in? That's the one thing this thing was missing.
Shot, yeah. Or I'm sorry. Well, I guess it was one shot. Ole Miss is a team finished at 11 over in that eighth and final spot. Florida State at 12 over in that ninth spot. Misses match play. It's tough. I mean, from a homer perspective, I was bummed that
perspective. UNC, Luke, man.
Well, for sure. I mean, there are numerous parts of this. I was hoping Carolina was going to advance and they were going to be in the mix. David Ford's going to be in the mix. That's a very homer take. I'm sure you feel the same about LSU. But from a national interest perspective, it's really tough to not have Luke Clanton involved, because that would have been a fun sort of flourish to his amateur career before he, of course, heads on the PGA Tour with the card he earned via the PGA Tour U Accelerated Program. And also on that note, I believe Jackson Koivun finished tied for fourth on the leaderboard. He did, yeah. Tied for fourth at 6 under. So that is the last point he needs to earn his 20 via the PGA Tour U Accelerated Program. So he also has the option to turn pro now, following the conclusion of this team match play portion, where his Auburn Tigers are the second seed. So here are the matchups you have right now. And we're recording this on a Tuesday. You're listening to this on a Wednesday. These matches are happening as we speak, or have already completed as we speak, and we're on to the next round. But the quarter matchups were Arizona State, the first seed, against Ole Miss, the eighth seed. Oklahoma State, the fourth seed, against Oklahoma, the fifth seed. There's an interesting one right out of the gate, a little rivalry match. On the other side, you've got Florida, the third seed, playing Texas, the sixth seed, and Auburn, the second seed, playing Virginia, the seventh seed. So, Smiley, you wanted to do a little bracket challenge here, huh?
A little March Madness
in May. A little May Madness.
Yeah, some of these matches have just gotten started. Not enough to where we know who's going to be the winners of these things yet. But I'm going to run through who I think is going to win each round. I'll let you do the same. I'm going to start with Arizona State. I think they're going to take down Ole Miss, although I know Michael Assasso, an individual champion, but still Arizona State's just so strong with Ballester, Preston Summerhays, and then there's another player on their team, I believe from like Thailand, I think, that's been like really solid.
Well, okay, you might be referring to someone different. I'm not even going to pronounce it.
It's like Leo Pacadi, I think is his last name. I'm not sure exactly how he pronounced it, but he's been a really solid player for them.
You also have Connor Williams as well. He's been playing great.
Yes, so yeah, Arizona State, I like them to advance. And then the Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. You know, it's funny. I look at their teams and just their players, and I just don't recognize as many names as I thought I would on their team. You know, I've covered plenty of USAMs, and I keep up with these programs, and just not as many names as I anticipated that I thought I would know. So with that being said, I'm going to probably lean – oh gosh, I kind of want to go Oklahoma State here, but Oklahoma. Well, give me Oklahoma. I'm gonna go to the SEC.
All right, okay, there you go.
So ASU playing Oklahoma, and then on the other side, Florida against Texas. I'm gonna go Texas here. I think they just have, you know, Tommy Morrison's just such a strong player. Luke Plotter, infamously the guy that they yelled at Rory on that tee, but an incredible player. And there's one other really good guy, Christian Moss.
Yes.
He's a very good player, I think, from South Africa. I like them to advance. And then Auburn, Virginia. Even if you want to take Virginia, who I think They have like three really good players too. Ben James kind of leads the charge there. Paul Chang kind of was a player that used to be on the club team, and now he's a he's stalwart.
He was
NCAA.
Their lowest scorer, and the portion of this that got him in
stripes it, man. Yeah. Stripes it. Still got to take Auburn there. So Auburn and Texas on the other side. I'm gonna have Arizona State going and beating Oklahoma, and then I'm gonna have Auburn facing Arizona State. These would be the one and the two seeds. So a lot of chalk here in the national championship, and I'm gonna have Arizona State, the one seed, winning it all. Hard to win back to back.
You're gonna pick against your wife, your daughter, Abby.
Can't have the whim everything in the house here,
that's,
Charlie.
That's fair. I just heard Anna Carver earlier, and I'm not sure if we're gonna get another reaction right now to the fact that you're going against her beloved Abby, but that's fair. Okay, so you have chalk. You got Arizona State winning it all. I like to zag. So I'm gonna zag here. Plus, it'll make for a great clip if I somehow nail a bunch of upsets. Here we go.
She's gonna join us.
Oh, great!
She's gonna come join for your picks.
Hey, Anna Carter. Your dad is picked against Abby. You should be very upset with him. My picks, I'll keep them nice and short. I'm going to roll with Ole Miss. Let's see a big 8-1 upset. It's not a 16-1 like March Madness, but I've mentioned, been a follower of Los Asos for a while. So we're going to roll with Ole Miss, just shocking upset over Arizona State. And then I'll go with Oklahoma as well. That's also a homer pick too. Big fan of Quade Cummins, so we're gonna go with the Sooners there. So we got Ole Miss and Oklahoma on one side, and then the other side, I'm gonna take Florida. I'm gonna be a Rory guy here, and I'm gonna go with Florida instead of Texas. And then I'm gonna go with UVA because if UVA wins, that makes North Carolina's loss to them in the ACC championships look better. Oh, wow. Look, you look very official, Anna Carter, with the golf hat on. The Golf Channel hat. What, do you have a report for us?
The report is that Frozen is going to be on
Frozen.
The
okay. We just watched Ferdinand the Bull.
All right, so help me out. So where are we at now in this bracket?
So I've got my semifinals are Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Florida, Virginia.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then,
you went code total oppo, man.
I'm just trying to go a little crazy here. So, and I'm going to say Ole Miss keeps the Cinderella run going, and they make it to the final. And then I'm going to send Virginia through to represent the ACC, and I'm going to have a Virginia Ole Miss final. And then I'm going to have Virginia winning it all. I'm going to keep it in the ACC, wahoo wah, things of that nature. So there you go. So you got Arizona State. I've got Virginia. We'll see how dumb I sound when this episode's out on Wednesday and none of the teams I picked make it to the semifinals. But that's the fun of doing this while it's happening.
There you go. All right. Well, we shall see. And also, congrats to Jackson Coivin.
Yes. Congrats to Jackson Coivin for getting his card via the accelerated program.
And I read that some report came out that said that he was going to defer to 2026, taking up status.
It'd be interesting. I mean, I think that was the timeline. If he did not finish top 10 this week, that would have been his timeline, given the point he would have gotten for the Arnold Palmer Cup. But now he has the option to go earlier because he's earned that point this week. So we'll see. We'll see what he decides to do. That is Smiley is fully on dad mode now. So this is the end of the episode. We appreciate you all listening. Hope you enjoyed Brad Faxon. Send us your replies. You're in the tweets. What your bracket looks like on the NCAA, the men's championships. And, we'll talk to you back here very soon.
You wait, bye, Anna Carter.
Bye.
Say bye-bye. You say bye-bye.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the